You can access theta brainwave activity without 105 degree fever. We guide them through a series of guided meditations, visualization, and a sound bath. This allows us, over the course of about 10 or 15 minutes, we can get into this space that is right at the cusp of theta, where our analytical filter is suspended. Oftentimes we say, you know, let's brainstorm without judgment. Really, it's less about judging others. We judge ourselves, the ideas we throw on the table. So getting into this headspace, we're able to do a little bit of wrestling with our inner critic.
You're listening to Paint and Pipette. I'm your host, Jeremy Utley. I teach innovation and entrepreneurship at Stanford University. Thanks for joining me to explore the art and science of bringing new ideas to life. Let's dive in. All right. I am excited for this conversation today. Welcome to another episode of the Paint and Pipette podcast. I am delighted to introduce a couple of my very best friends and very dearest collaborators, Mr. Josh Ruff and Mr. Marcus Hollinger. Josh, Marcus, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeremy, so much.
I already know we're going to go over. So folks, if you're watching or listening, just block more time because it's not possible for this conversation to only take an hour. I'm just kidding. We'll try to keep it tight. But if it goes long, maybe we'll split it up into two episodes. I don't know. Okay. So we are here today to talk about a new product y'all are launching, dropping. Give us a 30-second. What's the product? Why is today special? And then we're going to do a little time travel, go back in time.
Yeah. Today's 12-1. Today's the day that Idea Science drops. It is a three-hour ideation experience brought to the world by Stoked, the organization Marcus and I work for. And here's what it does. It takes a creative phenomena from music, explains it with neuroscience, and introduces practical tools we can use to unlock our own creative breakthroughs. And we're excited to bring it to the world today.
Okay, so three parts, all of which are near and dear to my heart. So you know that when we were talking just before hitting go time, we joked that Tangents is my middle name. I'm going to try to avoid Tangents as much as possible, but let's just start with why. You know, we say 12-1's here. Let's go back in time. When did you realize there was an unmet need? Where were you? What was the context that led you down the path that ended with where we begin today?
Okay. Sobering reality for our facilitator friends out there. When we ask a room of leaders, when's the last time they experienced a fresh idea, something that's worth pursuing and exploring, or at least writing down? When we ask them to reflect on their last fresh idea, it is often spontaneous. A walk with a friend, some quiet time between meetings, some space in nature. And the one common thing is that it usually is not in a brainstorm meeting.
And you mean, you mean that the conference room isn't the soil where flourishing, where creative flourishing takes place? I'm shocked.
Yes.
Not at all.
In the nature, we're in the business of leading workshops to spark inspiration. When we shift into go time, we often call it flare mode, where we're generating lots of ideas, huge variety of ideas. What we keep sensing, no matter how much provisioning we do, we sense this element of like, oh, now it's time for ideas? Here's a couple that I can think of. But when we ask people to rate their best ideas, it always comes from these mysterious places of spontaneity. And we wanted to do some reverse engineering to name how can we make those spontaneous combustion moments of great ideas a little more normal and predictable and maybe facilitated.
Okay, so let's talk about y'all before we get to facilitation and before we get to unleashing others, which of course we're all passionate about doing. Let's talk about your process as creators here. And it may be a little recursive, but this isn't Excel. We can't have circular references. It's okay. Finance joke for all my finance people out there. Let's dive into your creative process. So you realize or you have this moment that many folks have serendipitous, unplanned delight. What do you do once, and specifically, they aren't referencing the workshop, they aren't referencing the sprint, they aren't referencing the brainstorm. What happens next in your own process? What do you do with that insight? And what are your next two or three steps in taking action on what you've learned?
You got this one, Marcus?
Yeah, I think it's funny, in developing this, we kind of drank the Kool-Aid or practiced what we're trying to get others to practice. And I think it's dipping into our sources of inspiration. I think, and that's where music comes in, right? Where that's something that we both are actively engaging in when we're not actively working. Sometimes it's happening at the same time. And so it kind of naturally happens where, how music just kind of became a surfaced as this reference point for how to approach this problem. And once in following that, it becomes clear, like, oh, artists and musicians are constantly having the same problem. Artists and musicians are faced with, they're creating for a living. They're publicly creating for a living. And who other than them to kind of study to see how are you able to do this, not only consistently, but at a high level. And I think the first next step was just pursuing that curiosity and starting to wonder and then search for the stories that we just knew existed.
So, okay. So let's dive into that topic for a second. You talk about pursuing that curiosity. What does pursuing that curiosity look like practically for you in this history, in this historical biographical sketch? What did it look like to dive into that curiosity?
Okay. There's a quote Marcus turned me onto from Andre 3000, which is, pay attention to what you pay attention to, or notice what you notice. And we would just pause and assess what is calling for our attention. For both of us, it happened to be the same podcasts that dissect the story of how great moments in music came to life. And then it's the same stories that help unearth, wait a minute, that magic moment wasn't just magic. There was some sort of activity that sparked that moment. Being real with each other, debriefing what are we currently drawn to and why, gave us the space to just say, there's something here that's worth weaving into the problem that we're currently solving. So it really started with us noticing what we notice. And it's, hey, we both listened to Tetragrammaton, and this is our Rick Rubin year, and hearing the way he pulls these moments of breakthrough from popular artists helped us explore how to make this toolkit more accessible for the folks that we work with on a regular basis.
And so I want to dive into a phrase you used there. You said, get real. Why do you specify that as an important element of this? Why does that make the transcript of the history for you? Why is that important?
Is pausing and having some down-to-earth conversation with one another. And what allows that to happen is just having a safe space to check in personally and ask, what is actually driving or fueling your motivation? Those moments help us actually identify, is this a noble, novel problem to solve? Are people experiencing a pain by not resolving this problem? And by having real human-to-human touch points to connect and share, what are you drawn to right now helps us be real with each other and label it. It's so easy for some of those moments to just be fleeting or to say, oh, that's just what I do in my downtime. But really, it is something that sparks and fuels our next creative step and often is unexpected.
I see Marcus wants to get in there.
Yeah, because I think it brings back the Andre 3000 quote. So for what a lot of people may not know, Andre is half of the highest selling hip hop act of all time that just happened this year, Outkast. They just their album just crested highest selling hip hop album of all time. Well, from that album to this year, 17 years passed, where Andre had not put out any studio offerings. And between that time, he taught himself how to play the flute. And so his most recent album to break his 17-year hiatus was a chart-topping, record-breaking album that featured no rap. It was just him playing the flute. And what he said gave him the capacity to break that silence was the pay attention to what you're paying attention to and go after it. And so for Andre, he couldn't help paying attention to instrumental music, jazz, and that's what got him out of his rut and allowed him to produce record-breaking work. And so when I think about the getting real moment, it was, hey, we both actually pay attention to music that fuels our work. Let's pay attention to that. Let's take that seriously. Sometimes if it's not the thing that on the surface seems like it actively contributes to our work, we have a tendency to downplay it. But for us, it was like, no, like, let's get real about our exploration of music and see if there's something there. May not be, but we won't know if we don't get real and look into it. And that is significant in the history of the project because that's where the breakthrough came.
Before we get to the breakthrough, which I know everybody's like, wait, let's go to the breakthrough. But what are the environmental factors that contribute to your ability to, or the permission you feel, or maybe not, and why it stayed up? We just talk about these distinctions between work, not work, between pleasure, play. How did you think about, like, are these conversations sidebar conversations, off hours conversations? Is this really work? And what contributes to either of those dynamics?
Yeah. This is woven into a literal protocol that we are working into our working meetings, is protecting the first 15 minutes of each meeting to check in. And we'll change the prompts and we'll shake it up. And we can relieve the stress of getting to our meeting agenda by having that protected space. The reason we continue to protect that space is because we can see the ROI on the beautiful stuff that comes out of an unplanned 15 minutes shaping the future. A direct example that came from this is Marcus and I teasing out some really fascinating studies in neuroscience and how it's unlocking, or there's a fresh interest in the world of people wanting to understand the science behind what's happening behind the scenes. However, still a pretty steep on-ramp to get it and understand it. But by opening up that space, I think it was a week later, I participated in a silent retreat, a space to just choose to be in silence for 3 days at a monastery. And there was work to be done on that seed that we planted together. By having that protected space, I know how I operate. I need unplanned space for some spontaneous connections to happen. And that's where we took this link of musical phenomena that exists and the science of what's happening to drive breakthrough and marrying them together to get to something accessible and something that teams can apply really quickly. And so this recipe of protecting space to check in helps plant seeds we can put together on our downtime.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about this downtime. When's the next downtime scheduled? I mean, to me, one of the best ways to see whether it's a priority, like anytime, I just made a note to myself the other day because someone asked me, what are good creative practices for cultivating, you know, creative well-being, you know? And the first thing I found myself saying was make time for it. And I could immediately see the audience eyes roll. And because I'm somewhat, you know, sarcastic and confrontational, I just said, well, okay, before you roll your eyes, look at your calendar. You got time for sleep, right? You got time for food, right? You got time for exercise. If you're really enlightened, you got time for exercise. Show me the time you've blocked to cultivate your creative, whatever, however you define it. What's the time?
Yeah.
And people go, oh, wait, give me a minute, right? And the point is, it's one thing, like, you know, we can admire these tactics all we want, but if we aren't actually creating space. So all that say, I heard something there about silent retreat, which is an eminently eye-rollable tactic. Right? Everyone's like, of course he went on a silent retreat. But to me, the proof of that is, tell me about how you think about creating space moving forward in your life. Again, maybe even separate from idea science, but just, I like to dive into the practices of creators as well. So how do you think about continuing to make space a priority for yourself? Either one of you. Love to hear from both of you.
Yeah. Tuesday, December 12th, there is a design a day prompt that has gone out from Stoke, and we are actively, it's on the calendar, it's booked, and it's blocked. And Josh and I are currently leading a cohort of other creators for 9 business days. Today is business day 3, to come up with 9 ideas before committing to 1 on a challenge. And Josh and I are both, for 9 days straight, coming up with 9 ideas on how to spend that day, December 12th, of nourishing our creativity and taking off. So that's like one super practical, like, we're actively in the middle of that. And there's some good stuff coming up.
Yeah. I feel like we got to give a shout out to Anna Love. Anna's the CEO and co-founder of Stoked. She has helped really set the tone that enables us to take moments like this out. What she's done is said, hey, 6 months ago, she picked December 12th as the date that together as a Stoked team, we're going to block a day off. And the only role we have to play is be intentional about designing a day of downtime. So having that permission, but also getting some momentum of ideas together as a team, helps us be intentional and actually feel free to do it without the obligation of checking what's going on behind the scenes. Mm.
And as a leader, she believes so much in this concept that there's even allocated funds. There's this investment, right, of that's been issued or allotted for us to actually pursue this day. So shout out to Anna as a leader who puts the money where the mouth is, as they say.
Yeah, that's great. Shout out, Anna. I love hearing about, I was actually thinking more in terms of personal practice, and you went to an organizational, you know, answer, which I think is great because it shows there are things that we can do as leaders to create. You think about a high leverage, high ROI activity, right? A lot of times we think individually, but then we think about, where's my sphere of influence? What's the span of control I have? And for every unit of effort that I exert towards that span of control, I have the levered kind of impact, right? For Anna, it's one thing for Anna to do something for her own creativity, but for Anna to carve out a day for, you know, a team of 30, 40, whatever the number of people is that has an exponential impact, right? And a lot of times when anytime folks are asking me, you know, how can our organization ... I always say manage down, not up. You know, it's, you hear about some tactic, whether it's, you know, say it's, you know, these guys say we got to make space. The wrong thing to do is say, man, I wish my CEO gave us space. The right thing to do is say, who rolls up to me and what space can I create for them, right? And so it's just start with where you are, what you have, the span of control and scope and resources and people who you're responsible for, and you think about cultivating that environment for them. So, okay, let's go back in the history kind of timeline, so to speak. And you talked about before the breakthrough, there's this sense of folks recognize that the ideas that are really delightful aren't coming in the kind of planned settings. You guys have the time to get real together as a collaborative pair to think about the impact that music has on your own personal and, you know, creative practice. Josh goes off on his silent retreat. What happens next?
Okay. Next step is, how do we test this immediately? There's a morsel here. How do we test it immediately?
And what is it? What is it? When you say, like, again, not it being idea science, but
yeah,
at this point in the journey, what is it? And when you say, how do we test? I mean, granted, there's a great principle here, which is test things early. What is the thing you're trying to test at this point?
Yeah, it is a connection between the talking heads and the way that we abandon expertise, increase neuroplasticity, and explore something that would otherwise be a mental rut. We were both kind of like jaw dropped to hear the story of how Naive Melody, which is actually titled This Must Be the Place. It's the number 2 most popular track in the entire collection of songs written and performed by the Talking Heads. The way that they wrote that song was by switching instruments. And by switching instruments, David Byrne, normally up front singing, holding a guitar, is now behind the synthesizer. He does not play keys, but he poked around and uncovered the riff that many of us know and love now. It was tying that really interesting story that hooked Marcus and I to a behavior that's backed and valid, we're constantly working with right-brainers and left-brainers, even though that's been debunked. That terminology has been debunked. I think we all get it.
Noted.
What we learn is, how can we play with the really fun stories from the talking heads and root our action in something that's valid and credible? We found a connection to a study from Columbia University that proved that switching roles and switching tasks allows us to overcome cognitive fixation or get to an idea that's unrelated to the previous idea that we came up with. And so that was the first morsel, the connection we were excited to test. It was within a week, we had a gig on the books with a client, a paying client, and we found a really natural spot to weave that story and that connection into our next design sprint activity. That moment actually happened to get the most feedback at the end of our design program with the team. They identified that as the most relatable component that they want to take back with them as they explore making impact and taking these tools back to their team. So it was quickly figuring out, where can we apply this? And then picking something that was on the books happening.
So let's dive into that moment. What did you try? Talking heads, swap instruments. You see from Columbia that task switching overcomes cognitive fixation. Wow, we got a workshop. How do we get people to switch tasks in a practical way? What'd you do? And then I also want to get to feedback, because none of this works if you don't have mechanisms for learning whether it works.
Yeah. We had everyone scramble teams and intentionally be in ideation groups with someone who's in a department that is really disconnected from the problem that you're working on. We also gave them 1 minute to share the context of the challenge that they're setting out to solve, so that they're on a team with folks that don't have the context and cannot be labeled as experts solving this challenge. And by bringing really unrelated but fresh ideas to the table, it helped a lot of the folks who are working on this every single day break free from the very obvious ideas that come first and get into some noble territory.
And then how did you actually learn that later? What's the actual mechanism, the way that you learned, whoa, this worked? This was, people liked it.
You want to talk about the art walk, Marcus?
Yeah. And one of the things that human data, if you will, there were moments where participants who would self-identify as numbers people or more analytic or more decision-oriented would come up and say, hey, this is how I self-identify, but this exercise actually showed me that I can be creative. And so it's like, yes, boom, love that. Thank you. At the art walk experience that Josh is describing, as we exploded out there's multiple different versions of this, so hop in if I'm not grabbing the one you're reaching for. We gave participants an opportunity to look at prototypes that were built from the ideation sessions that came from this, and were able to walk other participants who did not participate in the design. They were able to look at these prototypes and silently react, and then join the process of co-design after getting a chance to kind of get a little bit of context. And so the responses and sort of the value of the way that the portfolio of prototypes advanced after those moments of switching expertise was clearly different. They were able to get to more exploratory and creative territory by way of mixing things up like that.
Okay, so you have this experience with the talking heads. There's a school of thought which says, great, let's optimize. Let's rerun the talking heads bit, right? My impression, and we'll get, now people are like, for crying out loud, what is idea science, right? So we'll get there, but like, how do you go from saying this worked here to maybe there's something more than the talking heads series of exercises? Walk us through the development sequence from you got that feedback after the art walk. What do you do as creators, as designers of learning, as revelatory learning experiences next?
We've had a lot of experiments cooking, and we assessed what experiments are yielding the best results. One example being incorporating meditation prior to divergent thinking. That by itself is a maybe counterintuitive tool for brainstorming, but we were seeing really great impact in the quality and quantity of ideas coming after meditation. Yeah. What we were able to, after seeing the success of Naive Melody and noticing what we notice, we were hearing stories from our current media outlets or media intake of, oh, that creative phenomenon is the same thing that happened when we experienced meditation prior to brainstorming or divergent thinking. And so seeing the connection or the recipe providing value, we were able to then identify and make connections where we see experiments we're running and tie them explicitly to some sort of creative phenomena in the music industry.
So what's the next experiment in your journey?
Yeah, right now we're in refinement mode. Today's launch day, but the way that we've been able to get to this launch is by assembling what we affectionately call the Idea Science Council. And this is a place where we take the earliest inkling of what we think might be worth exploring and run a session with them to test that moment. We have enjoyed falling on our faces and learning really quickly what we thought was a hit was not a hit. But by getting to that, we've been able to use this cohort to keep testing the next version. Right now, one of those that feels really great is this 9x9 challenge that Marcus shared, where we've learned what's really missing is some social accountability to practice generating 9 ideas to get to something great. In order to build that habit, we need to build some camaraderie with a group to practice this together. So that experiment is alive and well right now.
So tell us now, so we're here, today's launch day. What are you launching today with Idea Science?
So Idea Science is a 3-hour workshop, practically. We won't bury the lead there. And it takes a creative phenomena from music, pairs it with neuroscience, and delivers practical tools for leaders to solve ambiguous business problems, business challenges.
And what does it mean that it's being launched? Where do folks experience it? How do they, you know, okay, what now? I'm in. Where do I go? What do I do? Tell me more.
Yeah.
Josh, you want to take that one?
Yeah. What you do is go to stokeproject.com/ideascience. We are telling the story of this today on our socials as well. And you'll be able to get a glimpse of the first tool, the tool called Willie Nelson. What's the story? What's the protocol? And how does that tool come to life? To just get a taste. And there's an opportunity to connect with us to plan and price an experience for your team right from the site.
How many ideas have you tested today? How about your team or organization? IdeaFlow is a set of tools that help you test more ideas faster. I've worked with both high-growth startups and global organizations, and success comes when you test more ideas faster. Want to learn how better IdeaFlow can help your organization? Check out my website, jeremyutley.design, or reach out to me at jutley@jeremyutley.design. I'd love to talk with you. Now you've whet my appetite with Willie. Like, tell me the Willie story. Tell me, like, let's dive into Willie. Free Willie, you might say.
Yeah. Free Willie's creative phenomena, right? That's what we're looking into. Yeah, so Willie Nelson wrote 3 of his best songs with 105 degree fever. And that fever, the research behind that and what he was able to do is that in that febrile state of 105 degree fever, theta brainwave activity is running in his mind, and he's able to access a more lucid thought process to go after and capture more creative flow. And so the juices are flowing. He's writing his songs.
Don't tell me people lick doorknobs or something to get fever. Don't tell me. I'm out. Take my name off
Josh,
the list.
Tell him.
Yeah.
What comes next.
Okay. Really you can access theta brainwave activity without 105 degree fever. We guide them through a series of guided meditations, visualization, and a sound bath. This allows us, over the course of about 10 or 15 minutes, we can get into this space that is right at the cusp of theta, where our analytical filter is suspended. Oftentimes, we say you know, let's brainstorm without judgment. Really, it's less about judging others. We judge ourselves, the ideas we throw on the table. So getting into this headspace, we're able to do a little bit of wrestling with our inner critic, quiet, turning the volume down a little bit without judgment, and releasing some of the analysis we do on our own ideas and access these infinite possibilities, just like Willie. What comes next after going through this experience is just an exercise where we write about what we noticed, what we were surprised by, and what bubbled up. So
in the sound bath, you mean?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. In the sound bath. So it takes just identifying what is the problem I care about today that I'm setting out to tackle, setting an intention, and then allowing yourself to be surprised by how sometimes your subconscious wants to come in and say, hey, don't forget to think about this connection over here. And by accessing this space, we're able to free ourselves from the judgment that so often prevents us from getting into or beyond the obvious ideas or the ideas we think our boss wants to hear or our leaders want to hear.
So you set the stage with the Willie story. You create the environment with a sound bath and kind of a theta triggering, but non-harmful kind of, you know, non-virile treatment. And then you have folks kind of do some free writing of things that they experience. What happens next?
Yeah, to anchor it a little bit, what they're holding once they are submerged in theta is a tightly crafted business challenge that they're working on, something fresh from the top of their desk that they're going after every day. So as they surface back up from theta and look at the new material that they've been able to create, what we've seen is leaders and participants are becoming more and more surprised by the ideas that, wow, I didn't know I could. They're looking at their work and saying, I didn't know I could come up with that. I didn't know that that was in me. That feels wildly more exploratory and more inspiring than where I've previously been on this challenge. And from there comes part two. And part two of the experience is pet sounds. And so the recipe continues. We look at creative phenomena from the next group is the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, and how he was able to, or his mind was blown when he heard Rubber Soul by the Beatles. And he thought to himself, if I do anything in life, I want to make an album as good as that one. And he committed to a creative practice to channel the Beatles for his album. And so from there, we give a tool. We explain some of the science, you know, neuroplasticity is what's working there. We give a tool similar to what we did with Willie, and we advance this. We help our participants, our leaders, advance this creative portfolio that they're building following that similar flow. Like, here's creative inspiration. Here's the science behind that phenomena. And here's a tool. And we move them through continuing to build on their ideas and move closer to action that they can take on their challenges.
Yeah. What makes this next tool that's showcased after the Beach Boys bit is really enhanced because of coming out of the sound bath experience. There's a term that the caveat here is this term is going to sound like an eye roller. It is a dopaminergic tone is set, where often your dopamine, when it is triggered, is sent to all areas at once. But by following a meditation protocol, it actually triggers the release of dopamine that increases your access to memory. So when you're moving into this next mode of introvert brainstorming tools, following our Brian Wilson bit, you're able to make those connections based on divergent exploratory memories in your past much easier, having just gone through that protocol. So the experience sounds kind of wacky, but it's been amazing to see how this tool on its own performs against this tool after going through the Willie Nelson bits. opening up that headspace.
What you're saying is that sequence of events matters, and
absolutely
kind of psychological, cognitive place in which we find ourselves has a non-trivial impact on the effect of the next tools. And I think that's, I think a lot of times folks, they'll interact with something in isolation and go, oh, it doesn't work. It's like opening ChatGPT and like typing in like nonsense and being like, ah, it wasn't that interesting. Well, you're not really working it. Like, you got to work the process for the process to work. And so how did you decide on this particular sequence of activities, and how many other things did you try? What kind of stuff didn't work? Because it's interesting to hear what does work. It makes me think of what's all the stuff that you go, ooh, let's not do that again.
Yeah. The way that some experimentation has happened around that is how we deliver it. So we've delivered it in 4 parts, 1 hour each. And that has really crystallized how much the sequence of events matter. If you've got 1 hour and you just get that first step, we found that sometimes it's harder when we come back for that second step for folks to get back into that mindset, or rather we've taken the 2 modules and put them in 1 hour. And then we realize like, oh, okay, 1 and 2 connect, but then, you know, 2 weeks later or a week later, we come back and we do 2 and 4, and the jump from part 2 to part 3, it doesn't really translate to keep the momentum going through part 4. So all that to say, we've tested with timing and sequencing, and that's really solidified for us that keeping them together matters. You know, an hour and a half is a huge difference. It's a world apart from an hour versus what you can accomplish an hour and a half in 3 hours.
I, of course, like the music historian in me, kind of can't help but think you want to get somebody to Sgt. Pepper. You don't want somebody to get to Smile. You don't want them looping for decades on an unattainable goal. What would you say? You've got the 9x9. I don't know exactly where these streams intersect, but how does a 9x9 experiment interface with idea science, and what is their connection point? Are they mutually reinforcing? Are they separate? Are they, tell me more.
Yeah. What we know to be true is that breakthrough can't just happen in a 3-hour session. It doesn't happen in just a 3-hour session. We can give access and exposure to new methods that may feel counterintuitive or new, but in order for there to be impact, as we talked about earlier, we have to identify a way that we can build a habit, a way that we can practice a behavior that helps shift the way that I approach problem solving or creative problem solving in my work. So after going through this experience, we close it out with a bit from Kendrick Lamar. This started as legend that Marcus turned me onto, and then we learned from Derek Ali, which is the producer that worked with Kendrick Lamar on the creation of To Pimp a Butterfly. Kendrick Lamar obviously being the only rapper to win a Grammy and a Pulitzer Prize for this body of work. The phenomena that happened here is he recorded 80 tracks before selecting the 15 that would go on to make To Pimp Butterfly. What he's showing us here is the importance of creating quantity to get to quality. When we think of recording 80 tracks, these are not just demos or iPhone demos. These are full tracks created, imagined, and engineered in a studio before he cut so much away to make greatness in this album. And so what we're identifying is how can we take and leverage that inspiration and inspire the teams we're working with to focus on building habits that help us create 80 tracks in our own life. 80 tracks can't happen in a 3-hour session. And so the reason we do 9 ideas a day for 9 days is to get to 81 ideas in working toward this idea. We're building our own 80 tracks plus one bonus to get into the habits of building up this behavior. And where it really pays off is when a cohort experiences this together. When they're holding each other accountable to say, hey, did you get your 9 done today? And sharing what they learned along the way. And an example of this, oftentimes it's the 8th or the 9th idea that is the idea that the folks that are practicing this habit find the fresh new perspective and bringing that to life. So that's where habit formation really comes to play.
And so how do you create, I think that a lot of folks will resonate with that as a tactic of, I love that 9x9. You know, that's like saying, I love 30 pushups, but if I don't have a 30 pushup habit, so how do you go from, I heard you mention the idea of community, talk about whether it's community, accountability, or otherwise, how do you go from concept to habit in this case?
Yeah, we create space. The first thing is, you know, folks, right now we've got folks in a WhatsApp chat, and we send videos, we send and track our own progress. It's been so fun, I think, to lead by example. I mean, at this point, Josh and I are not facilitators. We're participants ourselves and saying, hey, we've got this real challenge. And we're also putting ourselves on the line to meet this daily deadline to then produce and grow in our own habit of ideation. Some other fun things is rewards. So at the end of the 9 days, there's a reward that folks can unlock for keeping up. Obviously, there's a reward of having built your own practice. But when it's social like that, you want to have something that you can share. And we've actually switched out rewards, and we're learning what's a small thing or on top of building your own practice that keeps it fun and makes it motivating. So
what kind of rewards are actually motivating people?
Well, we've experimented and we're experimenting right now with coffee. So, you know, I've got a coffee roaster here. Yeah,
there it is.
Right here in Atlanta.
Can I put my mug up there so that folks can see?
There you go. I got Mugsy there skateboarding. And so in this group, it's so fun because we were able to tell people, hey, if you get to the end of the 9 days and you track with us, we'll send you a freshly roasted bag of coffee from Atlanta with love. And it's working, right? Don't necessarily think it's so much about the coffee, but it's the fun of it. It's the reward sort of at the carrot, you know, at the end of the stick, combined with the social element. And also seeing other people's ideas, like, you know, we're screenshotting the ideas that we're coming up with. We're dropping them in the bucket. We're talking about, hey, day two, I struggled. So here's what I did to get to 9. I called some friends and I asked them to think about this challenge, to jog some ideas for me. So it's those are some of the rewards that we're holding out, but we're also experimenting with what community looks like. Okay, let me share the ideas I'm coming up with. Let me be honest about the struggles that, you know, let me talk about how I'm overcoming the struggles. And the one we're in right now feels like the most rewarding.
This reminds me of an early failure we experienced in bringing this to life and testing it. And we had taken the content we'd been developing and we tested with a neuroscientist. And we said, hey, we want to pressure test the way we're making, drawing these connections, invite you to share, like, what does this make you think of? At the end of our test with this neuroscientist, she shared, this sounds really cool. This is like maybe too cool. You got like the science and you got the music connection and counterintuitive tools. Maybe too cool that this would turn some people off. And that was a really sobering moment for Marcus and I. That stuck with us.
How do you respond to
being
cool for school? What do you do?
Yes. What we identified was missing was ratcheting up the element of play. What we keep learning over and over is that by creating a space for play, and Dr. Bo Lotto shares that play is the single human behavior in which uncertainty is sought. So in embracing uncertain environments, AKA innovation pursuits, play is a behavior that allows us to do this boldly and in a way that feels safe. And we figured out how can we infuse play in each moment. And we learned that goofy is kind of in our DNA. And by bringing an element of goofy in each moment, it actually brought really awesome sticking power to some of these habit tools. We tried introducing like a beautiful notebook with a 9x9 challenge, and people didn't use it. People didn't stick to the practice. By being goofy and sending video updates and lightening the load, it actually made it way more accessible for teams to play along, individuals to play along and have fun along the way.
What's the last goofy thing each of you did? Marcus, you go first.
Yeah. So I was at the coffee shop and I have a family, so I have to end my day at 5 p.m. No questions asked. And it was getting to be crunch time, and I was struggling with logging my ideas and fulfilling the commitment to the rest of the crew. So I go and I crouch down on the floor by the coffee that is in the roastery. And I say, hey, here's what I did today. Here are my 9 ideas. I grab a bag of coffee. I'm like, ooh, this one tastes like black tea and blackberries. So inspiring. Don't you want one? And just kind of drop it in there. And it's just like this thing. It left me feeling like, that was so goofy, or I didn't think enough about that.
In a good way, right?
Well, in a good way, because what we're finding is that that is the feeling that we're looking for. There's an innovation quote, and Josh, you can kind of help me out with this one, that says, if you didn't feel a little unsure or a little apprehensive before you shared the thing, then you waited too long. And so that moment of me, this is so small, really small scale. I'm just sending a video to inspire the cohort. But that feeling is ultimately what we're chasing. It's like, I got it out there before I felt super good about it. Now we can keep trying the next thing. So yeah, it was a good feeling. That's ultimately what we're after.
And Josh, what about you? Goofiness, what you got?
Yeah. Marcus, to what you were sharing, we heard that quote from one of the innovation leaders at 3M who we work with. And he said, if you aren't slightly embarrassed to introduce this idea or test this idea, then you've waited too long to test it. And so we always have a little bit of a slightly embarrassed meter that we're measuring. For me, today, I feel slightly embarrassed about a video that we're putting out in the world. This is my pretending to be in a Wes Anderson movie, monotone shot describing part one of Idea Science. I feel slightly embarrassed to put it in the world and to be goofy, but really it is the encouragement of Marcus to kind of keep pushing me along and my team to react and give input that helped me build enough confidence to say, yeah, we can put that out in the world.
Yeah, you can always delete it if you need to. Yep. It's fine. It's fine.
Your turn, Jeremy.
Last goofy thing I did? I mean, oh my goodness. Every day of my life. Last goofy thing I did, I was pushing a thought partner to create a loom, and she was intimidated by it. And so I pulled up a loom and I literally recorded one of me vocalizing the script I was giving to her and then sent her the loom of the script for the loom she should make. Basically just saying like, it's stop thinking about it, right? And I like what you said, Marcus. I wrote that down. Don't think too much. I think that we get in our way a lot. And maybe like, I wonder if a good proxy for the last goofy thing we did is the last thing we didn't let ourselves think too much about. Mm. And you know, if you think too much, you're going to talk yourself out of any amount of goofy, right? But it's like, what would you do if you weren't going to talk yourself out of it? A lot of times that stuff can feel goofy, but then you realize, oh, it gets you a long way towards where you want to go and a lot farther than overthinking it is going to get you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So Josh, Marcus, where can folks follow up to find out more if they want to immerse or see Josh's Wes Anderson monotone cameo debut?
Okay. First, you can follow Stoked on LinkedIn, STOKED. You can find us at stokedproject.com. You're going to see that Wes Anderson goofy video that just went live 53 minutes ago as we launched the podcast with you. And you can follow us at Stoked Project on Instagram. And remind us that we have some flowers to give you, some imaginary flowers to give you at the end of the session that we can't forget.
Imaginary flowers. That's beautiful. Yep. That's great.
Anything you'd add to that?
Keeping as we pass our flowers, keeping with the music theme, Kanye West, you know, has done a lot in music, and he's got this song where he is writing to Jay-Z, sort of the forerunner for his career. And he says, if you admire someone, you should go ahead and tell them, because people never get the flowers while they can still smell them. And so, Jeremy, so much of your work, Josh has been saying that Idea Science is a bit of fan nonfiction to some of the work that you've done. And so we just want to give you your flowers and saying that a lot of your work has led to the breakthroughs and the inspiration and sort of the blueprint for how we've approached this. So thank you for giving the space and putting the things that you put into the world as well.
No, it's fun. It's a joy and a privilege to get to work with such great people and to get to learn together. You know, and for me, it's a gift to get to learn together. I learn from you guys every time we get together. So I'm hugely indebted to you both as well. It's a reciprocal flower sharing at the very least. And also, Marcus, you guys do roast a great cup of coffee. So that's,
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks to Marcus and Josh for dropping some idea science in our laps. Go check it out today. Make the most of your holiday break. And until next time, we'll see you soon. By day, I'm a professor, but I absolutely love moonlighting as a front row student next to you during these interviews. One of my favorite things is taking the gems from these episodes and turning them into practical tips and lessons for you and your team. If you want to share the lessons you picked up from this episode with your organization, feel free to reach out. I'd be thrilled to do a keynote on the secrets that I've gleaned from Creative Masters or put together a hands-on workshop to supercharge your next offsite adventure. Hit me up at jutley@jeremyutley.design for more information.